So this is episode 3 from an online health group called the Live Longer, Feel Better Team. I think it's from Ireland. And I've been receiving emails with different episodes. This episode is episode 3 called Dementia, and it has some interesting information in it, so I'm going to record it on my tape recorder.
That's right. Because I have realized when we started to make these series and through the whole health journey in the last few years, that actually everything's related. Because very often you find people with dementia are also depressed. People with diabetes are depressed. People with one autoimmune disease actually end up with 3, 4, 5 autoimmune diseases. So it seems to be all tied together in many ways.
It's amazing to me, especially, and we'll get to this a little bit later in the series, my wife has autoimmune issues that manifested in a number of different ways that seem to be interconnected. So I'm excited to talk about that. One thing to pay close attention to in this episode is Dr. Ben Johnson. He is one of the foremost experts in dementia on the planet, I think. I mean, and he's going to have some very, very interesting wisdom to impart. So when you see him, pay close attention. You're going to want to know this for yourself, for sure. So listen, tune in. Episode 3. Enjoy it.
They don't know their own children, or they get angry. When they finally die, those memories persist. And wouldn't it be nice to just eliminate all that pain and suffering, not only for the patient, but for the family as well? And the answer is we can do it, and it's criminal that we're not. This is criminal negligence, and I accuse the politicians. People get older and they don't know their own children, or they get angry. When they finally die, those memories persist. And wouldn't it be nice to just eliminate...
This is Andrew Saul, S-A-U-L, PhD.
As well. And the answer is we can do it, and it's criminal that we're not. This is criminal negligence, and I accuse the politicians, and I accuse the pharmaceutical industry, and I accuse the organized medical professions of negligence. And I'm being as nice as I know how to be when I use the word negligence, because some people would say murder.
Well, that's certainly a dramatic opening to this episode. Andrew Saul is a friend and a colleague, a best-selling author, an expert on nutrition, and a man not given to making unsubstantiated claims. But there is one thing that makes Andrew angry. And that thing is unnecessary suffering. So how does that apply to dementia?
This is the reason why. Vitamin B12 deficiency is clinically identical to Alzheimer's disease. You give me 100 doctors, and you give me 1,000 Alzheimer's patients, and you give me 1,000 people that are deficient in vitamin B12, and I don't think those doctors will be able to tell the difference. Unless they do a simple blood test. And it's as simple as drawing your blood to get your cholesterol checked. When they're drawing your blood, tell your doctor you want a B12 test. I did. I thought I might be taking too much. I've been taking extra B12 for decades. And I also thought I might be getting too little, because the older you get, the more difficulty you have in absorbing B12. It's just the way we're made. So my B12 came back just right, which is good. But I've been supplementing, which may be why. A B12 test, inexpensive, simple, easy. Vitamin B12 tablets, over-the-counter, oral tablets. You get sublingual B12. You just put it under your tongue, let it dissolve between a meal. Methylcobalamin is probably the best way to take it. Cyanocobalamin, which is more common, is not quite as good. You can get B12 patches, you can get B12 nasal gel, you can get a B12 shot from your doctor. That'll give you fast relief. Thing about the shot, though, is it's an intramuscular injection, and it'll feel sore because the fluid goes in there. They put in a cc, maybe possibly two, and it takes a while for that to dissipate. So you may have a sore arm for an afternoon, but you won't have that trouble with a B12 patch. Everybody's heard about nicotine patches. How many people have asked their doctor for a B12 patch? And more to the point, how many doctors have offered it? And why not? Shame on them. If I know this, and I never went to medical school, I took a different route. If I know this, they should know this. I taught clinical nutrition to chiropractors. Chiropractors know this. You can't tell me that medical doctors can't know this. And yet, their time is filled with other things. It's time that we get back to the basics. B12 deficiency should be ruled out. That's the expression in medicine. Rule out B12 deficiency. Everyone that has any sign of Alzheimer's, any sign at all, or anyone that's over 60 should have their B12 checked, and then we know if they need more B12. Now that's just B12. Let's talk about niacin, vitamin B3. We'll talk about niacinamide. Now this is actually new research. Since you and I first talked in that vitamin movie, there's been more research, and it was done on mice. They took mice with the human equivalent, or the mouse equivalent, of Alzheimer's disease, and they gave them niacin as niacinamide. That's a form of niacin that does not cause a flush. So everybody that's saying, oh, I hate the flush, no. Mice probably hate it too. They gave them niacinamide. Niacinamide does not cause a flush, but it's still niacin. It's inexpensive. It's over the counter. The mice got the human dose equivalent of 2 to 3,000 milligrams of niacin a day. Now, the RDA for niacin is under 20 milligrams for a person. So 2,000, you take 20, you have to add two zeros to that. This is orders of magnitude more. This is two orders of magnitude, 100 times more niacin, or 150 times if they got 3,000. The researchers said of the mice that got all this niacin, cognitively, they were cured. That is a direct quote from the study. That word is cured. And they added that you could see no sign that they ever had the disease. Now, for my money, if you can cure Alzheimer's disease in a mouse with niacin, niacinamide, 2 to 3,000 milligrams a day, and your grandmother or your father are not getting that, well, it's time we fix this. And the only way you're going to do it is if you insist. And the only way you're going to insist is if you know. I urge people to check. The Orthomolecular Medicine News Service did a press release on this. The Orthomolecular Medicine News Service is free of charge. It's peer-reviewed. No one's selling you anything. It's non-commercial. You can go online or go to my website, DrYourself.com, and you can get a link there and see these actual press releases that we've issued on this. Now, that's just two vitamins, B12 and niacinamide. And I think that if those two vitamins were administered in sufficient quantity to people threatened with or actually diagnosed with or even severely affected with Alzheimer's, we would see reversals of this disease.
Specifically on Alzheimer's, what can one do? I mean, that's a big fear that lots of us have. What can one do to prevent that or minimize the risk?
Eat real food. Make sure a high percentage of that is fat. Go back to that food pyramid that I was throwing out.
This is Philip Day, D-A-Y.
Particular food pyramids, but if you're eating 80% plants and, you know, having a some good quality meats on top of that, if you're vegan or vegetarian, make sure you're getting enough of the B group. You know, not far from here in Guildford, they did an amazing study which showed that if people, they took a group of people who were moving into early stage dementia, and they gave them high potency vitamin B complex, which methylated homocysteine, builds up of homocysteine in the body, which was pushing them into the fog. And with high levels of methylcobalamin going into the system, this was able to methylate or detoxify the homocysteine down under 8 micromoles, which essentially pulled them out of the fog, which was just remarkable. We know that vitamin D, people, as they age, tend to, their levels of vitamin D drop quite markedly. So keeping the vitamin D up is absolutely vital as well. So I would say hydration, fats, plenty of exercise, staying the heck away from medications which we know create problems, like statins and others like that. Beta blockers have just been given a real kicking in the media today. You know, now we're saying, well, we're giving all these beta blockers out. We shouldn't be doing that even now. You know, you've got to ask yourself, you know, if we're failing on such a fundamental level here, you know, what else have they got wrong?
I think it was the San Francisco Chronicle. They did an article in 2015 about Alzheimer's. And they said that for all the people that live to age 85, half of those people in the next 10 years are going to develop Alzheimer's. You know what I said to that? It's not going to happen. Because most of those people are going to die either of heart disease or cancer before that happens, right? But the
hey, you know, now we're saying, well, we're giving all these beta blockers out. We shouldn't be doing that even now. You know, you've got to ask yourself, you know, if we're failing on such a fundamental level here, you know, what else have they got wrong?
I think it was the San Francisco Chronicle. They did an article in 2015 about Alzheimer's, and they said,
Dr. Daryl Gioffre, Gioffre,
people in the next 10 years are going to develop Alzheimer's. You know what I said to that? It's not going to happen. Because most of those people are going to die either of heart disease or cancer before that happens, right? But the crazy thing is that these epidemics that, as a child, I didn't even hear of. I never even heard of Alzheimer's as a kid. Now, it's a third leading cause of death in this country. The reason being is Alzheimer's parallels inflammation of the brain.
Ben Johnson is 3 times a doctor. A doctor of medicine, a doctor of naturopathic medicine, and a doctor of osteopathy. He also has a degree in biology and a master's in psychology. He's been awarded an honorary Doctor of Science degree and received the Lifetime Achievement Award from President Obama. On top of that, he's health minister for the Southern Cherokee Nation. So when Ben talks, I listen.
I mean, people talk about the cancer epidemic. But it seems to me there are several other epidemics now that people are talking about. And dementia is one of them. My own mother died from dementia. I wish I had known then the little bit that I do know now of options and things that might be done. But for our audience, can you explain your perception of what dementia is and why it is so prevalent today? I mean, I remember people talking about, you know, Alzheimer's, old-timers disease. It was almost like we were being prepared. When you get old, this is what happens.
Indeed, the medical establishment, including the pharmaceutical industry, is very methodical. They're looking decades down the road, as Rockefeller and Carnegie did get back in the late 1800s and early 1900s. They went way down the road, very methodical, very long vision. And so, yes, they prepare us for these things. And you can still go on the Alzheimer's sites today and they will still say, oh, there's no cure and there's no prevention. We know clearly, I mean, UCLA published a paper back in 2014. In medical time, that's light years ago, telling how you can reverse Alzheimer's. And prevent dementia. I mean, that should be on the front page of the Wall Street Journal and New York Times. But people don't know that, and doctors don't even know that. Now, oh, well, try this drug. It really hasn't shown much success, but it may help for a few months. That's the best they've got right now. Dementia, so Alzheimer's is one of the forms of dementia. So I may use those interchangeably, but they're not exactly interchangeable. But a mind is a terrible thing to lose, and we don't want to go there, and it is preventable, and a lot of it is reversible. So, for instance, Alzheimer's is not called diabetes type 3 for nothing. So it's a matter of controlling blood sugar and blood sugar spikes, and things that promote tau formation and different free radical processes in the brain. So antioxidants are huge in that. Of course, up until just in the last few years, doctors have told, oh, those vitamins, they'll just give you expensive urine. Well, now all of them are getting on board. Maybe more about money than anything else, but at least they're getting on board. Because it's so preventable.
Dementia and other degenerative diseases, they occur.
Dr. Kolaru from Turkey, Kolaru.
The older we get, then the more we see these problems, these diseases. The brain is small compared to the rest of the body, but it's using most of the oxygen. But in order to produce energy inside the brain blood flow, the amount of oxygen needs to be sufficient. It's chasing oxygen. If you don't have sufficient oxygen, the brain can't tolerate this, so we need to make sure the energy is being produced well. So the first and most important thing is oxygen. You should check if there are any blockages in the neck, if there's any sleep apnea. Hyperbaric oxygen treatment in such cases will be very beneficial. When you go inside these pressurized cabins, like underwater, this can be very healing. So energy is produced as clean energy through the mitochondria. But we need to have good fat and plants in our diet to make this happen. The aging of the brain. If this is going to be taken as brain inflammation, we need to correct with oxygen and the best fuel we can provide, not cheap fuel. Plants, local plants, organic, good fats like avocado and nuts, and the fats inside seeds, vegetables, spices, fruits. We need to be using those as fuel for the brain. We can also use certain supplements. The older we get, actually, the more important omega-3 becomes, because the membranes inside the brain are composed of omega-3. There's a role for omega-3 and omega-6. If there's much more omega-6, the inflammatory process is initiated. So omega-3 is vital. The amount of fat is the most important thing, and oxygen.
Downtown in the Big Apple, it was a delight to finally get to meet Dr. Daryl Joffrey. Daryl's the author of the best-selling book, Get Off Your Acid. He's convinced that one of the keys to reclaiming health and energy is an alkaline diet. And many of his patients and followers, including a few celebrities, will testify to its success.
People are consuming so much sugar, it becomes the primary source of fuel for their body. And when you consume sugar, what are you going to burn for fuel? You're going to burn sugar. And then what's your body going to crave? It craves more sugar. But what happens is, just like you can get insulin sensitivity with your pancreas, your brain will get insulin sensitivity as well. And that's what type 3 diabetes is. But if you look at dementia, there's other things that take into play. It's not just sugar. Because the goal of what we want to accomplish, not just to help people lose weight, but metabolically, to basically help our mitochondria, which is the energy producing of the body, you need to move that person from burning sugar as their primary source of fuel to burning fat, all right? Because metabolically, that's what the body wants. Sugar, it's like a quick, dirty burn, right? But when you burn fat for fuel, it's like a clean source of energy. It's like a slow-burning coal. Your body can last all day long. And that's the preferred fuel for your brain, right? You see, your brain is 60% fat. So if you're putting sugar in your body, it's going to cause oxidation and inflammation. And what that's going to do, it's going to inflame your brain. But if you put fat into your body, it's going to help the fat. It's going to help the brain because your brain is 60% fat. But what you have to understand is that there are fats that heal and there are fats that kill. And as far as dementia goes, there's a huge difference between these two fats.
In our last episode, focusing on diabetes, Bea
then gave the lowdown on sugar and the devastation it causes. Dementia is so closely linked to diabetes that the same things apply. Also in our last episode, John McMahon demonstrated that it's never too late to start making changes. But clearly, if we make them when we're younger, we have a much higher chance of robust health in our later years.
So we want to move away from sugar spikes and inflammation. And so that's diet and lifestyle. So we've got that fluid, foods. Now we move on to exercise. There's never been a study that showed that exercise increased any disease. And there's never been a study that didn't show that it didn't improve whatever condition you had. So if you've got osteoarthritis, then get in the pool. But swimming is going to make you better. Exercising is going to make you better, no matter what disease state you're in. How many times does a doctor recommend exercise? Like maybe 1 in 1,000 or something or less? But it's highly beneficial. How many of them recommend diet? Well, that's not in their area of expertise. A state where I have a medical license, I know a physician that was called before the state board because he was giving nutritional advice to patients. And they said, what's your training in this? 3 hours in medical school? Well, that does not make you an expert. You don't have a degree in this. We're going to put you on probation, and you do that again? So it's scary. First of all, doctors are ignorant, willfully ignorant, unfortunately, about nutrition. And so they just don't give nutritional advice. They're not recommending exercise. So these are the number one and two things that we want to be working on, diet, exercise. Then thought fill, you know, I went all over the world looking at what's now come to be called blue zones, centenarians, and studied centenarians. And they all had five things in common, and I found, okay, the five F's I call them. So food, they were all eating fresh food out of the garden without pesticides or chemicals, fertilizers. Fluid, they were all drinking fresh water without chlorine or fluoride or chemicals or pharmaceuticals, with nicely mineralized. The water was typically alkaline. Number three, faith. They all were in relationship with higher being in their culture, God, Allah. They all had significant belief structures. Family, they were in relationship with their family. We move so much in the States that it's, but try to create family where you're at. If you don't have any family near, if you've got family, try to be in relationship with them if it's tolerable at all. And then the last one was very important, function. So in America, we live to retire. And then because we no longer have a purpose or function, we promptly die. Because we no longer have a purpose to live. So I was in Vilcabamba, Ecuador, interviewing little Maria at 105 years old. And up until, I think, the year before, she had been the local midwife. She lived to catch that next baby. She lived to help women in labor. So she had a reason to live. So you want a purpose. You want a reason to live. So you're 85? Start a new business. Get a job with a purpose. Find your passion. I don't care if you're 85 or 90. Find a reason to live. So that's hugely important, having a reason to live, a purpose in being. If we don't have a purpose, then the universe no longer has a purpose for us.
One of the things we have to look at is the omega-3, omega-6 ratio. It's an important thing because omega-3s are anti-inflammatory, where omega-6s are pro-inflammatory. So ideally, you want that ratio to be 1-to-1, Right now, people say if omega-6s are pro-inflammatory, why do you want them at all? Because you have to understand is that inflammation in the short run heals us. If I get a little cut, it's inflammation that's going to get that cut to heal up, not the mercurochrome or the band-aid that someone puts on, right? So life heals, all right? But what happens is once we have chronic inflammation that's there for an extended time, that's when inflammation causes the damage. So that ratio of omega-3s to 6s should be 1-to-1, no more than 1-to-4 omega-3s to omega-6s. But the average American has 19 times the amount of these pro-inflammatory omega-6s compared to 3s. And the problem is this, they compete for the same enzymes. So if you have that big of a difference between the two, which is going to win 100% of the time? The omega-6s. And because your brain is 60% fat, these omega-6s, these pro-inflammatory fats, literally take your brain out. They make your brain whack. They make your brain crazy. They make your brain inflamed. So in my book, Get Off Your Acid, I interview a doctor named Dr. Hilbin, and this study blew my mind away. So he basically analyzed murderers and people in insane asylums, and he measured their average omega-6 to 3 ratio, and the average ratio was 70-to-1. And one of the things he said above just crazy choices, the reason why they were making these crazy choices was that they had so many of these pro-inflammatory omega-6 fats that it literally took their brain out and made their brain crazy, chemically changed their brain. So I really believe that it's about prevention. If we want to prevent dementia, we have to really get the inflammation balanced in our body. We have to get that ratio back. And we actually do a test where we can measure that with a drop of blood in the fingertip. We can actually tell how inflamed the body is. Cholesterol is not the problem. It's the omega-6 fats. And they're in everything. They're in non-organic, non-grass-fed meat. They're in vegetable oils, soybean oil, corn oil. It's a lot of food.
It just struck me recently that I remember a few years back people talking about old-timers disease, and it was kind of preparing us to expect when we get old, we get this thing. But you're clearly saying there are things we can do when we're at risk or we're getting it. Should we be doing this? Should you and I be doing this now when we don't have a direct indication of Alzheimer's?
Well, I am. I'll go get you the vitamins if you like. They're right out there on the counter. I'm taking niacin or niacinamide, both usually every single day, and B12, as I mentioned earlier. I'm not going to wait around and see. I don't think we should take the chance. It seems to me the smart money is on prevention, but prevention is very, very difficult to sell. Most people don't come to nutrition until the drugs don't work. And I did consultations with people for decades. And my most successful clients were the ones that were the most desperate. And that is human nature, and you just have to accept it. But for those who come to it now, they're better off. If you think you need a new furnace, it's probably good to have it done in the summer. Have the work done in the summer. Don't wait until winter. Don't wait until there's a foot of snow. Don't wait till it's even getting colder. Don't wait till fall when everybody else is getting the furnace. Get it done early. Just makes sense. This is something that we call common sense. Our medical system is not based on common sense. It's based on disease dollars. It makes a lot of dollars. It doesn't make a lot of sense. And that's because we allow this. We allow doctors to treat members of our family without giving Alzheimer's patients niacin and B12. We allow doctors to treat us by giving us a drug. And that's our fault. It's also their fault because they should know better. On the other hand, they went to medical school. They studied medicine. They prescribed medicines. They're MDs. That's what they do. So going to your medical doctor and trying to get nutritional treatment is pretty much like trying to order chow mein in a French restaurant.
Okay. I'm going to have to start taking niacinamide. I do take my B12s morning and night.
The dose is the key. A lot of people take multivitamins. A lot of people take some niacin. But they're not taking enough. And it's dose, it's dose, it's dose. The same with B12. A lot of people get some B12 in a multivitamin, but they're not getting enough. So the difference is between a maintenance amount that might keep you well or might not, and that's the twilight zone that we all live in, or taking enough so it's just a non-issue.
But then are there potentially any downsides, any difficulty, any potential to overdose on B12 or niacinamide?
B12 is really a safe substance. And the other thing I'd like to emphasize is the amount you need of B12, even though I say a lot, it isn't very much, because a very large dose of B12, a really large dose of B12, would be 5,000 micrograms. Now, a microgram is a millionth of a gram, and a gram is a quarter of a teaspoon. So 5,000 micrograms is 5 milligrams, and a quarter teaspoon has 1,000 milligrams. So we're talking a very, very small amount of B12, even in a huge dose, and the safety record of B12 is very high. The safety record of the entire B complex is very high. In fact, it's safer if you take them all together. And as far as niacinamide goes, or niacin, I have personally looked at the statistics from the American Association of Poison Control Centers again and again and again. These have been published for the last 35 years or so, and there has been no deaths. There have been no deaths from niacinamide. Nobody is dying from the B vitamins. I consider that to be pretty safe. Biggest drawback with niacin is that it causes a flush. But I specifically mention niacinamide. Oh, another thing researchers mentioned about this niacinamide treatment for, actually it was for multiple sclerosis, because niacinamide also stopped MS, by the way. And they said the cost of the treatment was $30 a year. And I know people that have multiple sclerosis treatments that cost thousands of dollars per treatment. Now, I don't have to tell anybody watching this where the money is here.
I think one of the most important things for dealing with dementia is getting omega-3 fatty acids. Omega-3 is one of the biggest deficiencies that I find in my clients. If you look at the average adult, male and female, they need about, on average, 3,000 milligrams of omega-3s. So people say, why can't I just eat fish? You can get omega-3s, but the problem is you can't find a cubic centimeter of ocean that has not been contaminated with mercury, PCBs, dioxins. So yes, you can get omega-3s from eating fish, but the flip side is you get mercury poisoning, all the other bad stuff. So, you know, in moderation, make sure that it's a very clean source. Wild caught is so important, because if it's not wild caught, what's it fed with? Corn and soy. And corn and soy will pump up your omega-6s, which are inflammatory. So people are consuming things thinking that it's making the inflammation lower, but it's actually making their inflammation higher. But there was a study from it's called the Framingham study, and what they discovered in the study over, I think, 12 years or so, was that on average, the group that had the higher DHA levels had the lower amounts of dementia. So it's just a very powerful study. So it just shows that DHA and EPA is one of the most important nutrients, not just for cellular health, but for brain optimization. You know, EPA is the part of fish oil that fights inflammation. DHA is the part for brain optimization, and you need both. Now, the problem is a lot of people think that you can get this from chia seeds and vegetable plants like that, and I'm a huge fan of those, but the problem is that they do not convert. All right, so chia seeds, hemp seeds, and flax seeds are not EPA and DHA, they're ALA. So to get the EPA and DHA that your body needs to fight inflammation and to improve brain health, it has to go through a chemical reaction in the body. And the problem with that is the most it converts is 1%. So this is why I think anyone that deals with dementia, or just for optimization, for optimal health, especially if you're pregnant, if you're nursing, it's the most important nutrient for the baby's nerve system, for the growth and development of the brain, is that DHA. So that's why I'm a really big advocate of supplementing with omega-3 fatty acids, fish oil, so important.
Well, when looking at Alzheimer's and dementia or any neurological degeneration disease, we've got to understand what are the building blocks, what's the makeup of the brain and nervous system. That's why I come back to the fats. They're so critical to insulate the nerve cell, right, and the brain, where mostly fat and cholesterol is. So if people are on, in their middle age years or later years, on a statin drug, these are things that lower cholesterol, I call that drug or drug category the gateway drug to automatic, guaranteed dementia or Alzheimer's. So that, for one, has to be addressed and assessed, and realize that the wrongful fear of cholesterol has created a cottage industry of neurological degeneration. It's devastating to see.
How do we get the discipline to step out of that? And to what degree do we need to do it? Do you allow yourself an occasional corn chip? Do you allow yourself the occasional glass of wine? Do we have to do that maybe 5% of the time or 10% of the time we can get away with it, but the rest of the time
we have to be eating fruit and veg and exercising in clean water.
Here's the problem. It's called the gut-brain connection. Our gut biome, the bacteria in our bowel, we are seriously outnumbered. The ratio is about 10 to 1, with them being 10 and us being 1, number of bacteria versus cells in our body. And there's huge ranges of estimates I've heard. 10 trillion of our cell, 1 trillion of our cells and 10 trillion of their. I've heard 100 trillion of them and 10 trillion of us. But the ratio seems to stay about the same, about 10 to 1. So we are a parasite on our bacteria. So we want very healthy bacteria in our gut. Unfortunately, well-meaning doctors have given us antibiotics and killed off vast numbers of our healthy bacteria. So think of a garden, and the garden is your bacteria, in this case, the gut biome, the gut bacteria. But the soil is the prebiotic. That's what the bacteria are growing in. That's the soil that they're growing in. So you can take a prebiotic, but your prebiotic should literally be the food that you eat. So you eat to grow healthy bacteria. And that's called vegetables, nuts, and fruits. And then you put some healthy bacteria in there to reintroduce them. But the bacteria here are in constant communication with the brain. They're sending messages. And as soon as you put that sugar in there, as soon as you put that grain, as soon as you put these toxic things, they're going to send messages. Oh, we like this. Send more. And so it's hard to, if you fall off the wagon, you frequently fall off the wagon. It's just like alcoholic. You eat that candy or that ice cream, and you just start craving. Why are you craving it? Because these guys down here are sending messages to these guys up here. Send more. We like that. Because it helps the bad bacteria grow, and they send the messages. Send more. So it's best if you can stay on the wagon to not go there. And it's tough. You know, you've been so good all month, and you just want to have the scoop of black walnut or black cherry ice cream. It is, oh, so yummy. If you can, resist that. It's not healthy for it. It's not good for our life, for our health, for our longevity, for our brains. It's not good for anything except to feed the bad bacteria.
So with diabetes and dementia, we have a clear nutritional connection, and we're not making that connection real. Medicine is not focusing on this. It's not on TV. Your doctors are not taught in medical school. The pharmaceutical companies are not telling you to do this either, because obviously their interest is in selling a different therapy, a therapy that's more expensive and, in my opinion, not nearly as good and probably not curative. Of course, if you have a drug, the idea is not to cure anything. The idea is to have it so a person has to keep taking it.
We've already heard advice about the need for exercise. Let's think about it more as the need to keep moving as much as possible.
The stark reality is the older you get, you do have to work harder to maintain your health. And a very simple example of this is the average person over 50 is losing half a pound. We're talking about, a kilo of muscle, every 3 or 4 years, half a pound a year. So, you're losing muscle unless you do something.
If you look at longevity traditions around the world, you discover the blue zones, of course, and you look at the kind of movement that takes place in those blue zones. They're very simple, regular, constant motion, squatting, carrying, lifting, agricultural work, stair walking, where I'm not talking about a gym stair walking, I'm talking about going up the mountainside. These show us that we don't need intense exercise. What we need is movement.
So the older you are, you actually do need to be doing something that builds muscle. And this is very important in women, especially the upper half, because, we can walk and climb the stairs and so on, and that keeps some muscle in the legs. But there's an awful lot of women who are doing nothing to build upper body muscle.
I want to pull from my experience as an exercise physiologist who trained high-performance athletes, Olympic athletes, professional athletes, and kids who aspired to be that, right? They knew why they were exercising. And so I would challenge anyone listening to this message to first really appreciate why they need to exercise. You know, surrounded by computer screens and high technology and doing all the work I do today is much more sedentary. When I exercise, my entire day is better. And the kind of exercise that's in my mind right now that I'm talking about is just simply the act of walking. For most people, that is by far the most valuable form of exercise. Feeling very anxious, being somewhat depressed, and maybe not even knowing why, having an elevated blood pressure, having an elevated heart rate, feeling like the legs are not that strong anymore, feeling like you are losing strength in your heart and your cardiovascular system and your energy is a little low, or maybe you're not thinking very clearly, you have a little bit of that brain fog and it kind of bothers you, but you don't know what to do, I would steer everybody in the direction of doing just regular, easy, comfortable aerobic exercise, again, on a steady basis.
Do we move as much as our ancestors did? A lot of us don't. But we seem to think that jogging is the way to go. Now, look, did cavemen go jogging or cave ladies? They had no need to. What cavemen and cave ladies did was to walk from place to place. Now, if they were going out to catch a deer or a rabbit or a squirrel, they went running after it, right? Or if someone were trying to run after them, someone from a neighboring tribe, they ran away as fast as they could. So basically, cavemen walked, they ran as fast as they could to catch lunch, and they ran as fast as they could to not be lunch, basically. Yes, that happens to be called interval training. It's the intense exercise for a short period of time. And research shows that that's really the best exercise for health. Among other things, it raises growth hormone levels, just the exercise itself.
One of the most valuable forms of exercise you can do going into old age is what we call high-intensity interval training, which would be where you, say, take a set of stairs, go up and down them a few times till you're out of breath, but not uncomfortably so, which is about 70% of your maximum heart rate. Maintain that for about 60 seconds, then allow the heart rate to come down, then go back into up and down the steps again until you get back to that level of intensity. Do that 8 times, and that's a procedure that you can deal with in about 15 minutes.
We can do as little as 10 to 15 minutes, 3 times a week, of intense exercise, and of course we have to recover thereafter, so it takes about half an hour, but 3 times a week, and get out from behind the desk and do that sort of stuff.
If you can get out and have a good walk, I've got a couple of dogs, so my job's very cerebral. I'm working with computers all day long, and then 3 times a day there'll be a set of nostrils underneath my arm, and it's time to take the dogs out.
If walking is so difficult for you, there's always bicycle riding. There's swimming in a pool, although I do have my personal issues with that, because if you're going to swim on a regular basis, you've got to be very careful about that health-wise, especially if you have health issues, because if you're in a heavily chlorinated pool and you're breathing that in all the time, I do have to throw that out there. That is an area of concern.
Do you know, there is no one recipe that is going to work for everyone, because we are all individual. However, there are many times it's a question of finding what is the ramp for that individual. For example, for someone who's been sedentary for much of their lives, finding a way of getting them active may be absolutely key. And what tends to happen, what a lot of clinicians have found, is that telling them, you know, you should subscribe to a gym membership may not be the answer. We actually see a huge issue with people who've got gym memberships and never go to the gym.
So many people have the wrong notion of exercise. I think it's from no pain, no gain, which I know is out of the bodybuilding community, but man, I can tell you over the years, it has spilled out into what so many people feel exercise needs to be to get a positive result. It has to be painful.
Sitting is the new smoking. So I won't sit. I'll set an alarm on my watch to make sure that I don't sit for more than an hour without being active. Building bits of physical activity
into your daily life is absolutely key. It's not always about putting on your gym clothes, because if you do that, you're putting another obstacle in the way of being physically active.
Balance is a big part of being physically fit, especially as we get older. One of the biggest things that people fear when they get older is losing their balance and breaking bones. So developing your sense of balance is freeing yourself from these machines. I'm a big proponent of free weights, dumbbells, bars, anything you can do with your body weight where you're not really connecting yourself to a machine.
You don't need a doctor for this. You don't need anything for this except the decision. And in life, we make decisions. You just do. And people are every day deciding, I will or will not exercise, or I intend to. But they don't, because something else is put in front. You have a choice. You can either get out in front of this, or you get run over by it.
Some experts believe if we work hard at it, we can get all the nutrition we need from our diet. But I'm on the side of those who reckon we need to supplement with vitamins and minerals too.
Definitely need to supplement more. It's very simple. Cells are a little bit like factories, you know, they get a bit worn out. The energy factory, the mitochondria, doesn't work so well. So yes, there's a very, very strong case for supplementing extra nutrients as you get older.
It all began for me with our previous film, That Vitamin Movie. Researching that convinced me I needed at least vitamin C, D3, and a multivitamin. I've truly felt the benefit of taking them.
I started civilian practice when I retired in 1998 from the Air Force, and I started testing each of my patients for it. I tested all my patients for their D levels, and they were terrible. My first 1,500 patients I checked, one had adequate vitamin D3 level.
But that must mean there are huge implications for everyone, from the cradle to the grave, basically.
These deficiency states exist in women before they conceive and during their pregnancy. And the kids are born deficient. When you look at the D deficiency rates at the time of delivery, it's very significant. And the poor babies, they're born with a D level that's 20% lower than their mom. And so if the mom's level is low, the baby's level is very low. This affects their outcome when they're in the nursery, in the hospital, and it affects their health during the first couple of years.
Let me just pass something along that I hear from my patients for you personally, and that is once they get their vitamin D levels up to the tropical optimal, which is 60 to 100 nanograms per milliliter, and that usually takes the average adult living in a climate like Northern Ireland at least 6,000 units a day. No kidding. And then you go get your blood tested and see, and you want to shoot for the tropical optimal. They take that much. Most of the people I work with who are adults in Seattle do, and we have the same climate, you know.
When you look at some of the life-limiting problems like schizophrenia, they've shown that having vitamin D early in life, even if it's just for a couple of years, reduces the lifetime occurrence of schizophrenia dramatically. It's a huge change. And these are disorders that we're not doing very well with once they occur. So the therapy needs to be keep them from happening. And that's where we're going to have the great benefit. So D isn't good at one thing. It's good at a lot of things.
I spend about $1.50 a day on vitamins. So that's around $500 or $600 a year. How much does it cost to be in a nursing home for one day? $500 or $600. And we live in a culture that will pay that much to have a person kept in a hospital bed and fed lousy food, and it won't help you do that to prevent being in that bed. We need to change that.
There's been some work looking at what happens when you take people that are significantly D deficient and improve it. They do live longer. To me, most importantly, they live a lot better. It's a lot easier for themselves, for their family members and loved ones. It's easier for their employers because they miss a lot less work. In the U.S., you can spend so much on health care that at the end of the day, you wind up not in good shape financially. So being healthy helps you to become wealthy.
our income level, whatever age we are, we can all get some sunshine, get moving, and work towards a plant-based diet.
There are two and possibly three basic supplements that should go with that diet. The first is vitamin C. And that's one that everybody in the world who happens to be human, and you're human, you're not a space alien, are you?
Not that I'm aware.
Right. And were you aware that the human need for vitamin C is a result of a genetic defect that all humans share? You probably were. Well, all right. Now, what's vitamin C supposed to do? It's supposed to help us work against just about any kind of stress on the body, and I'm not talking just emotional stress. Let's say you give an animal, a dog, a carcinogen. That dog's liver goes into overdrive and it makes triple, quadruple, quintuple the amount of vitamin C until that carcinogen is detoxified. Let's say you give a rabbit, and dogs and rabbits, and all species except for humans, gorillas, guinea pigs, there's a few species of fish, but all the rest, the elephant, the kangaroo, the dog, the cat, the rabbit, they all make their own vitamin C on their own livers. Our livers are missing the last enzyme, which is coded for by the genetic defect, which makes it not there. And that last enzyme in making vitamin C can't work. So when you give this rabbit over here a vaccine, oh my God, the lab rabbit's liver goes into overdrive. And notice I said vaccine, it doesn't happen with just viruses, it happens with vaccines too. Many of them are toxic insults because of the contaminants in the vaccine. All right, it goes into overdrive until that thing is detoxified. Our livers go crazy trying, but they can't make vitamin C. So here comes a virus into our systems. We're disabled. We can't make vitamin C to chase it away. We have to take it from the outside. So we need that very good diet I was mentioning. We need vitamin C, we need vitamin D. And then for most of us, unless we can take the effort, the time, and the money to eat 90 to 100% organic, we should be taking a multiple with a little bit of everything in it, you know, just a little bit of zinc, a little bit of copper, a little bit of vitamin D, and so forth and so forth. So that's the other thing I wanted to add to the basic nutrition these days, that cavemen didn't have to take supplements.
And the title of my talk here is The Panacea Paradox. See, we've been taught that if something sounds too good to be true, it's false. But if we believe that, we will miss out on all these molecules that are too good to be true, like D3, like C, like magnesium and iodine. These are substances that we know a very high percentage of our American population is short of. We can demonstrate that through testing.
And are the required steps the same, whether it's a cameraman in his 30s or a director in his 60s?
If you're 30, if you're 60, the basic truth is you have to look into it for yourself and you have to change your life. People often ask me for curbside advice. What should I do for my fill in the illness? Oh, what should I do for this? They don't want a lecture on vitamins. They want a nice, tidy, short answer that's just as short as their question. Well, it's hard to answer a health question at all on the curb, and it's very hard to answer a short question without a long answer. But I finally have one. When people say to me, what should I do to improve my fill in the illness? My answer is, you have to change your entire life.
So that was episode 3 on dementia. I hope you enjoyed your introduction to Andrew Saul. Andrew's going to feature quite a lot in the series. I have worked alongside him for, 4 years now, I think. And honestly, he has an encyclopedic knowledge of all things vitamins, all things supplements. And it all makes a lot of sense to me. So I hope you enjoyed what Andrew brought to the table. He's a fascinating guy. Tomorrow, Timmy?
Tomorrow. Okay, listen.